Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them an unexpected twist. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, "The bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve." These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and to flourish. I hope you enjoy it, and if you need help with your own personal navigation and you're in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, 2Manage Vets Consulting. Enjoy the bend and be inspired by our wonderful guest. Welcome. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of The Bend. I want to introduce you to my guest, Steph Suppen.
Suppen.
Okay, because this is German. Is it German?
It's German. Well, it's actually French. So the original would be Suppen, but I am German. Yes, so Suppen.
Okay. Suppen. Okay. Now, if it was French, maybe I had a little French when I was in school. Maybe I could have remembered that. But Steph is the owner and facilitator at The Leader's Work. And she has, as 15 years working as a veterinarian, said she learned that stress, even in the most difficult situations, is an option. And so she has a passion to help veterinarians, primary caregivers, be more effective by cultivating the ability to stay calm, confident, and joyful at work. She teaches private sessions and workshops, and she helps her participants stay grounded in challenging situations, using their inner wisdom and building strong yet subtle support structures for themselves. She has written a book called Awakening from Fear, which describes how inquiry into everyday fears can lead to greater personal freedom. And she has also taught homeopathy for animals and breath, water, sound with the art of living. So I'm curious. I want to know about the breath, water, sound, because that's something new to me. So thank you very much for being on The Bend today, Steph. And I really appreciate your time. And I look forward to sharing you with the world, or my world, so to speak, whatever that might be. So tell us a little bit about your journey here, because you mentioned to me earlier when we were talking that you were traveled from Germany, you worked as a veterinarian in multiple countries, and then you're here. So tell us about your story.
Yeah, thanks. Debbie, well, first of all, just let me very briefly say thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. You know, the time and the interest. I'm slowly starting to see that I am a bit of a gypsy. Like, I would just like to go from here to here, and you know, and because there is so much to be learned in this world, the world is just so beautiful, and you meet so many amazing people on the journey. So I really tried to settle this time around. When I came to the US, there was this like, okay, this time I will settle. And after a couple of years, I went, you know what, maybe I'm just a gypsy, maybe this is not what I do. So anyway, so my journey to doing what I am doing, so I studied in Germany, graduated from Berlin University in 1999. And then, you know, at that point, Germany was too small. So I went out and I started working in the UK. And then from then I went to South Africa, and I was in South Africa for almost 15 years. And that's where I met my husband, and I had my kids there. And you know, my journey with veterinary medicine was that there was a moment that, you know, that decided I was going to study veterinary medicine. And it came about because I did a test that allowed me to get in despite not that great grades. And everybody was so excited for me to become a veterinarian. So I was like, okay, well, let me do that. And I think everybody on the long run, you know, that just wasn't the right career, like not for this particular career. It's not that I don't love animals. I've been a horse rider. I do have animals living with me around me all the time. You know, I feel very comfortable with them. And that part of veterinary medicine has always been great. I love being at a clinic, you know, handling, being around animals all day long. And I can also, I'm quite good with humans too.
Well, that is the perfect formula for a great veterinary career, is the people part of it to be the most difficult for the to manage.
It is for many people, yes. But I, you know, that was it wasn't my hardest piece. My hardest piece was start like was the amount of things that I needed to know to feel confident. And because I was like I think I have a really high intuitive intelligence, so it wasn't difficult for me to get through the studies. But you know, but when I got out of college, I felt sorely underprepared, and you know, and you get thrown in the deep end. And it's like nowadays it's less so because there really are amazing mentorship programs and stuff. But for me, it was terrifying. It was so terrifying. And you know, and then the old bits, like you work at the small practices and they just go like, oh, you'll be fine. You know,
Yes.
they went through it too, so they survived. And you look at it and you go like, okay, maybe one day.
But for those old
Yeah.
vets, there was so much less to know. I think
And
that's,
that.
I feel like it's really important for us to stress because I have been working in a veterinary hospital since 1985. And we only had two conversations at that point in the game, and it was about fleas and flea allergy dermatitis. Or something like dire, like the animal had been hit by a car, and it was either that or just some kind of disaster. But we now, I mean, I can remember when we first started doing dentistry, and the first client I ever suggested it to looked at me like I had two heads, and said, "Are you insane?" That's exactly his words to me. "Are you insane? You want to do what to my dog's teeth?" I went, "Well, so I can say that now I look at people who are trying to learn the profession, even as CSRs coming into it, and think, oh my God, there are so many products, so many processes, so many services that we do compared to when I started. And I learned them gradually, you know, as they came into the profession, I was learning them one at a time. You have to walk in and learn them 50 at a time now. They're much
Yes,
more complex.
exactly. And then on top of it, now since I started, there is this, you know, this culture of litigation and this culture of blaming. You know, it's not just litigation, it is also blaming.
Yes.
You know, just in the small, you know, in the small ways, like you know, I blamed myself for not knowing enough. And nowadays, you can put so much more blame onto your shoulders for not knowing enough because there's so much to know,
Yes. Yes.
right?
Yes. Well, I read a really great line yesterday. There was a young veterinary technician. She called herself a baby tech. And she said this client came in with an animal who was just in deep distress, and they did what they could for it, but then the animal died. And then she blamed them for that. And a more experienced technician got on and said, "My practice owner used to say, when I ask her, 'How do you take this?' because people will blame you." And she said, "They have to have somebody to blame other than themselves." And that's why it's, you know, I just can let it roll off my back because it's not really me they're blaming. They're blaming themselves for not acting sooner, for not knowing more, for all those things, but they can't own that guilt because it's too painful. And so she says,
Exactly.
"So I take it, but I take it and I let it roll because I realize where it's coming from. It's just coming from grief." And I feel like that's such a mature attitude and maybe something that you teach too, because I feel there is so much perfectionism in this profession, so much imposter syndrome in this profession, and realizing that you can't be perfect, you can't be always right, and that no matter what you do, sometimes the client will blame you for whatever it happens to be, and there will never be
Exactly.
anything you can do about that because you can
Yeah.
only control yourself and you can't control what they do.
Exactly. And that's exact and it's exactly what you're saying. This is what I've learned over the years is that everything that comes at me that, you know, somebody blames me, somebody's angry at me, this hurts because actually I'm holding this view of myself. So if somebody like walks in front of me and says, you just killed that dog over there and I had nothing to do, you know, it doesn't hurt at all. It just, you just go like, you know, you're insane. Nothing to do with that. Whereas when it hurts, if I hold like, yeah, maybe I could have done this better. Maybe there would have been something. Maybe they're right. That is when it really hurts. And that goes for every single negative emotion that we think comes from them to us. Mm-hmm. And that's what we carry. And so the process that I use is a way of using those judgments, like they're wrong, you know, they shouldn't be blaming me, and really investigating them so that we understand. And what comes out of that understanding is compassion for ourselves mm-hmm. and for the other person, because, you know, not only do you know that this person who blames you, they have to put it somewhere because it's too painful. Mm-hmm. We understand it because we're like, yeah, you know, I do that same thing. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we can connect to that person again, and we can, you know, go like, yeah, you know mm-hmm. what? I feel you. Mm-hmm. I feel you. This is so hard. I so wish this didn't happen.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah. I remember teaching a class one day, and one of my students, we were having them practice conflict and tell stories mm-hmm. of things that had actually happened in practice, and how some of the skills I taught could have helped them move beyond the conflict. And mm-hmm. one of them said, well, you know, what do you say when your client comes in and goes, I'm an attorney? Well, what is he really trying to say to you? You know, his dog died. And what had happened was the dog had been in the prior day. He had been vaccinated. Everything on his physical was completely normal. And he went home and he died in the night. And he comes back with, I don't understand why my dog died in the night. Why didn't you see something? You know, and then it's, I'm an attorney. And I said, what was the pain that he really, he just said that I'm an attorney just to get your attention. But what did he really want you to say? And he really wanted to say, you know, I understand your pain. I understand the frustration. I understand that it makes no sense. But also in human side of health, we have all known people who were perfectly fine and died the next day. It just happens that way sometimes. And you have no way to know that. And mm-hmm. and people know that, you know, they know that mm-hmm. logically, but in the moment their heart hurts, and you have to see what is happening in their heart mm-hmm. and then give them the grace to move through that and not react to it yourself. That's the other thing, is you can really make it worse by mm-hmm. by becoming defensive and starting to get worse. And this is one of the reasons I tell students, you really, if you are a good communicator, if you understand your brain, the people across the table mm-hmm. from you, how the things are happening, then you don't have to worry about litigation, because people will not sue you when they feel like you truly care, that there is compassion and mm-hmm. you understand where they're coming from. So I want to talk to you about how you got into like the training that you give people, the workshops that you do, and talk a little bit more about the mindset, how you learned this mindset and then moved into teaching other people.
My way into that was basically, what I tried to do with that terrifying is learn more, learn more, learn more. That's how I got into homeopathy. So my specialty became homeopathy. And in homeopathy at the time, we didn't have a lot of literature on animals. That since then there is a lot more, but back then we learned personality profiles of humans mostly, and just a little bit animals. So I really started to understand the difference of personality of humans, and it was fascinating. It was so fascinating. It was the first time that I had a field of study in front of me that I really got into, because I was like, wow, this I want to know. And but the other thing that during that time when I started learning, what also I was doing was I was drinking more. I was starting to take more drugs, like party drugs. Mm-hmm. And that got to a stage of where I couldn't control it. Like, so there was, you know, like my relationship was really tottering. Like, I was together with my husband, and he's lovely, but it was really tough. Because, you know, I just wasn't coping without drinking anymore. And then that got to a stage of like going to a party and then only having 2 hours of sleep, going to work the next day and throwing up during work, really finding it hard to focus. And that day I went home and went like, it's not going to work like that. I can't do this anymore. I have to really make change. And so at that time, I then started to do therapy and do homeopathy. So You go every month and you have a remedy. And so over years, really, that started to get me out of that. And around the same time, one of my friends is a meditation teacher, and she got me to come on my first course. And I continued to try and walk out. It's like the first evening, the first night, I was like, I went to the teacher and said, "Sir, I've looked at this. I came, I looked at this, but it's not going to work for me."
I think I remember the first time I tried meditation. I felt like a squirrel in a cage. Like my mind was like, tick. And I'm like, "No, you're pull that back, pull that back, pull it back. You're supposed to be."
Oh, goodness, it was so difficult. It was like somebody, yeah, like a cage, somebody's gonna push a like thing on my head. And then the first silent retreat a couple of years later, I actually did walk out without talking about anybody, because I knew if I'd started to ask, they would keep me there. But you know, at the same time, I knew enough about myself to see those things as like, you know, this is probably where you need to go if you're having that much resistance to it.
That's right. Yes.
And then one person said to me, you know, you teach what you need to learn. And if you're getting into teaching, you know that you have to be the teacher who walks the talk. Mm-hmm. So I started to do teacher training. And that got me into doing my daily practice, because I couldn't stand up in front of people saying this is good for me, for you, yes, without doing it myself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that, and so that's what really got me into doing a practice every day. And so since 2009, I've been doing my meditation and my breathing technique almost every day. And so then I got interested into different spiritual books, you know, like and then also I came across the work of Byron Katie, which is the main process I use. So I've enlarged around it and like used different things as well, but that is the main process. And it just really turned my world around. It just like, it was, I read her first book and it's called Loving What Is, and I saw the book and I went like, yeah, sure. That's cheesy to the extreme, and I put it over there. and you know, and then sometime, this is my twins were 5 months at the time, so I was home with them, but there was just like, oh my goodness, it was hard. And then I opened the book and I didn't put it, I'd like read it every moment I had time, and it just, and I cried so much through it. There was this woman who describes a way of lightness in her world, of patience, of compassion, of, you know, looking at those people that rave at you and go like, I see your pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And mm-hmm. I was just like, I want that.
Yes. I want to be that calm.
I want to be that.
Yes.
And that was the beginning. That was like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what, and I've never stopped working at it. It's never been a doubt since then. And at that point, I started to change my career patterns towards having my own business and doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in your business, you work with human health too, and not just veterinarians, but human health providers also, or anybody who's.
I do have a quite a wide range of people that come, because a lot of it is through referral. Mm-hmm. You know, so people are referred, and then like not one veterinarian is just going to refer another veterinarian, so they come from all kinds of backgrounds. But yeah, I love being able to work within the veterinary profession, because for me also, you know, I'm so attached to animals' health. Mm-hmm. So I want people that work around animals to just have that like quiet mindset and to be able to listen, and you know, and it goes every time somebody who works in the vet practice has that mindset and talks to people like that, it goes out into the world, right?
Yeah, it does.
So with the animals, so you know, I want that's really, I want to be able to do that. And then the thing is, I know how stressful that can be, you know, just to, because it's life and death. Yes. It is life and death. on so many levels every day. And, you know, I think that's a big thing that we often don't, we don't even really approach in our minds that this is a big part of our stress, because, you know, we don't think about death that much. And that is another thing for me that is a really important thing that I learned, is that death is part of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not just like, yeah, okay, well, it has to, but actually, every time there is a little death in us, what I'm thinking is that, you know, we don't think about death. We don't think about death as really being a part of life. I mean, there is this intellectual, of course, it's a part of life. Of course, it's the end of life. But still, we treat it as something that's not really part of life. It needs to be prevented at all costs. And it's really a problem if it occurs. And, you know, so yes, it's hard. You know, yes, we want to prevent it. And yes, we do support the health, the living health of the animal over its spiritual health. Of course, you know, these things are true. But in the larger picture, every death in our own lives, every time a part of it dies, we get to grow into something new. We get to be born into something new. And if we start to look at, you know, the whole of our lives in more of that way, you know, it's a little bit less fearful.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah. You know, when I first started as a part-time CSR, one of the managers who hired me had been in her other life, a surgical scrub nurse for a human side. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she had a perspective of, you know, looking at all the people coming in for the years in the animal hospital and the human side of health. And she said, Debbie, here's what I've learned. There's worse things than death. When people are so afraid of letting their animals go, or they selfishly can't let their animals go, then their animals suffer for no reason and humans suffer for no reason. So there's mm-hmm. it is a gift that we can give people. And I think because of the training that I had, like from the very beginning of it, I never thought that it was necessarily a bad thing. And I have friends like, you know, Danny McVetti and Mary Gardner, who started Lap of Love, which is in-home euthanasia. And the fact that you can make it a positive experience if you mm-hmm. treat it appropriately, if you support the client appropriately, if you're looking at supporting the animal appropriately. In my perspective is energy never leaves. And there's mm-hmm. always energy around us from the people that we love. And my father died when I was 16. Many people in my family, my brother has passed away. He's 3 years younger than I was, but I feel like, sometimes I have that guidance, especially from my father, because he was an excellent business person. And I feel like sometimes when I've had the most challenging business questions pop into my head, there's a voice behind me going, think about this, do this thing. And it kind of like, oh, this is a problem solver for me. So I with you there, I understand what you're mm-hmm. talking about when we do not, but we don't even talk about death. Like my mother is 90, and the older you get, the more you talk about it, because as young people fear death, but yes. old people are like, nah, it's all right. But my mother is hilarious because she just had her birthday in September and she said, well, I guess we should have the party in the cemetery because that's where all my friends live. And but there's just a, you know, there's a pragmatic attitude toward it when you get to be a certain age. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's coming. It's okay. But yes. I love the fact that you're thinking about, you know, let's not hide from this. You know, it is a part of life, and mm-hmm. we do have to move through it, and we need a skill set that moves us through mm-hmm. grief and helps totally. Us support other people in grief the same way.
Totally.
So when you were talking about the breathing, mm-hmm. it's something I have taught for quite a while when I'm talking about dealing with conflict is box breathing, because that sometimes just, it engages the smart part of your brain. It stops mm-hmm. the hijack from happening. And it's such a simple thing. And if, when you start to breathe in a pattern, because we mirror the people who are with you, start to mirror the pattern and they start to breathe slowly and rhythmically, just like you do. But that's, takes a lot of self-discipline. How did you teach people to be disciplined enough mentally to be able to deal with this, you know, and see what's happening in their own head? I feel like that's mm-hmm. such a challenge for us.
Yeah, I don't teach anybody to be disciplined. I invite those that are, I know my journey has been up and down and up and down and up and down, and discipline in the beginning was really hard. I mean, so, each of us are ready to go as far as we go. So, I'm open. I'm here to support a practice. Like, for example, I have a Monday meditation that I've been doing for over 2 years. So anybody you can drop in with that and have like a thing. It's a good thing to have a group, that you like, A, you start to pay for it. B, you get to make friends in it. So you get to go more often. And then, if like, okay, I'm going to be there for the next 5 days every day, or for the next 8 weeks once a week, it's easier to come back to it, because a lot of the time, if we just do something once, we find the benefit, but then the part of us that doesn't really want to change will quickly come back and just like bury it again over every day, with every day like old habits, So yeah, I think really, the support comes in the commitment. And the only way I facilitate that commitment really is by say, give me some money that'll make it worth your while. And then to say, like, okay, well, what do you want? Do you want to just start, change, know the processes? Then that's not going to take so long. Can you take it from there? Or do you really want like in-depth support for like the next 8 months, so that you really get into a habit of thinking differently? Because that really is where the charm starts to be, is like to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, so that you not only do you see like, oh yeah, this is worthwhile, but the what do they call that again? The nerve structures, the nerve
The
near those ones,
neuropath,
exactly. They start to run along different lines, and you really see the stress that you're putting yourself under, and you just like, so this morning, for example, like getting ready for this podcast, like my phone just says, bling, hey, you don't have any more data until tomorrow. I'm like, oh. And I really fall into this, like, oh my goodness, and how can that be? Da, 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 and the phone. And then my husband walks past and says, hey, do you want to use my phone? And in that moment, I could just let it go and say, like, oh my goodness, this universe is awesome. Look at that. He's not meant to be home. He's home just to
It
keep me
provides,
the.
the universe provides.
I know. And so once you start, training your mind to look for those, life just becomes smooth, like really, really smooth. And then when you fall into the drama, because we fall into drama, it happens, we're human, and like you quicker get into like, oh my, what am I doing?
Right. You recognize it. You recognize the drama that you're getting sucked into, and you're okay, now
Exactly,
business. I need to
exactly. And you
settle.
can laugh at yourself. I'm like, sometimes I describe it, I've got that, the there is the Chinese laughing Buddha. It's that little fat little man, the self with the gardens and stuff.
Yes. Just
And
feel
sometimes I
there.
just have him sit in my belly, and he just like, whenever there is just this laughter bubbles up, and it's so sweet. And yeah.
Well, and it's funny, you can use that humor, you can use the laughter to de-escalate things too. So
Oh yeah,
if you
so
have to
much.
judge it, you really have to be a good judge of this, because I would have clients that would go, oh my gosh, this is so expensive, and I'll go, yes, but at least you won't have to buy your dog a car when he turns 16, or Air Jordans, because that was the day when Air Jordans were the thing. And then we go, you know what? You're exactly right. I said, not to mention the fact he never talks back, and he's really, happy to see you every day, instead of those teenagers that you live with. And oh yeah, so you can use humor to let people see the humor in a situation too, instead of becoming defensive and starting to escalate a situation. Or that, I used to call it new veterinary guilt, when veterinarians would come to work for us and they didn't know the price of anything, so they would just circle the services that they had performed. And then once they started to learn how much things cost, I started to notice that they would skip things. They went, oh, it only took me like 5 minutes to do this, or no, I don't think I'll charge for that. And we would have a little refresher course on how to appropriately circle things on your travel sheets. And because they would start to feel guilty about things, about their services. And like, well, you know what? You have 8 years of education and a whole lot of experience here. Don't be afraid to charge for what you do, but make sure that you are communicating well enough to where people understand why you're doing the things that you're doing and what the benefit is to them and to their pet. And a lot of times we skip that part. You know, we just forget to tell the people and educate the people. And when I was training my staff, I said, you know, our job is to teach people to be really good pet owners so they don't need us except for routine stuff. Because yes. we can educate them ahead of that, then that's great. You know, our job is to keep animals healthy and safe and not to put out fires all the time. Because that's, first of all, it's going back to death. My Lord, that's when things get really hairy, when you're trying to save something from the brink of death that could have been avoided. Which is the, you know, the thing is, let's just teach people how to avoid getting their animals in trouble, because they're animals and they will eat anything, you know, really, really.
Yes.
Well. Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, I love the fact that you're just, you know, inviting people to look inside their head a little bit and instead of just being reactive and understand those neuro pathways. The challenge with the pathways is the old ones never disappear. And I think that's an awareness that we need to have, is because they can creep back in on you so easily that you have to always have this little warning signal in your mind going, oh, you showed back up again. Let me talk to you and send you back to where you belong. I tell this story about these pathways. My husband used to smoke, and he would stop by the convenience store on his way home from work, and he would get a six pack of beer and a pack of cigarettes. So one night, like 15 years after he quit smoking, put the beer on the counter and said, and hand me a pack of Vantage. And then he went, wait a minute, I don't smoke. Where did that come from? It was an old pathway that popped back up. And it was like, oh my gosh, it does. So I think that's something that's really important for us to know about ourselves, is that the pathways do show back up. And the other thing that you said about having a group, it's accountability. It's having somebody who is expecting you to be there, who you feel like they'll miss you if you're not there, or they'll say, you know, you committed to do this and now you're not committed. I've often used it in training staff, calling it the Weight Watchers theory of people management, where you have to go in and wait. And a stranger has to put you on a scale, and you go, oh yeah, I'm going to make sure I lose weight this week, because I don't want this stranger looking at my scale and going, you gained 2 pounds. You know, that's not the way we want it to work. So I feel like that accountability piece of it is so important. Same thing for when we're trying to make any kind of change in our practice. This is what I do as a consultant. I come back to the practice. And I come back because I want to make sure that the change is happening. Because if I don't come back, there's like no accountability, and things just get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back, and change doesn't happen. So how do you encourage people to get started? I mean, what would be for you? You kind of talked about, you know, just getting into a point in your life where you felt like things were going on a downward spiral. It doesn't necessarily have to be that dramatic, but people could, you know, just feel a little, you know, feel a lot of stress, or feel like they have no control of their life, or feel like they can't say no to people. How would you encourage those people who are just not feeling quite like they should, not having the joy in their life or their job, to get started on a better path or building a new path?
So I think there is two places of it. So there is, you know, are you looking to make a big change, or are you looking to stay with where you're at? Are you just trying to improve what you're doing, right? So I think there's always room for bringing more joy into our lives. So a good time to start with doing this is like when something comes in front of you and you have that thought of like, should I do this? Should I work into it, time into this? And if you're feeling like you're drawn to it, and but then the thought comes, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, then you know this is the thing. Go for it.
Go for it.
because really it is. And in my experience, what I have found is that if I then say, okay, yes, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, but I want it, something shifts that allows me to go with it. Mm-hmm. So money will come from somewhere I didn't expect, or I send them a message saying, I really want this. Can you give me an offer? And things move mm-hmm. like that. So to have an awareness that we will sabotage ourselves from moving forward and moving out of the negative drama, like the painful drama, into a better pattern, there is resistance. So just to know this and, you know, and go like, okay, yes, this is going to be a little hard, but I will do it anyway. Because mm-hmm. I like the end result. I like the end result. And so, yes, we were going to have, you know, there's not, as long as we're alive as humans, until such a time we're enlightened, you know, like these amazing teachers, there's going to be some amount of drama, mm-hmm. but it will get less. It will get less. And that is something we can really work on. And it makes life so much more fun. If I can walk into your practice, like as a supervisor, for example, and I've got like two warring fractions and they come to me and go like, well, they should be doing this. And well, they should be doing that. And I can see how they're both right. And that is how I can approach it. And I can both, like, you know, recognize both of them, like say like, yes, I can see you doing a good job doing that. And yes, you can see you doing a good job doing that. And how can we communicate that better to each other, you know, without falling into a fight here? Mm-hmm. You know, like things like that. It just makes you feel so satisfied with yourself.
Yes.
When you go home that day, you go like, ha, I did that well.
Yes.
And then you get like these little messages that I get from, you know, some people on LinkedIn that nominate their supervisors or nominate their mentors and go like, this person is always there. They are patient. They are kind. They are supportive. They have good things to say. They have wise words. And by understanding our patterns and not falling into the drama, this is what comes up, because this is our nature as well, is the loving, the kind, the supportive, the wise, if it's not overshadowed by trying to be defensive and not holding out, you know, pushing away pain. So any time is a good time to start this. The work is harder when you're at the bottom. Mm-hmm. If you just want to improve, you're already doing fine and you just want to improve, the work is easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just far to go. Yeah, you don't.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I do think that looking, you know, over the years, I've managed hundreds of people, interviewed hundreds of people, worked with students, you know, hundreds and hundreds of students. And some people just go through life in this kind of negativity. And then other people are very receptive. And so when I was teaching, I would have all these wonderful reviews. This is a great class. I really enjoyed it. Wonderful speaker. And then there would be this one who were like, this is nothing new, blah, 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 blah. And they were like, wow, were you in the room with the other 50 people? Because you don't feel mm-hmm. like you were. But I can't own that, because that's her receptivity to the offerings that I have. The other people enjoyed it. And mm-hmm. then I've made an impact on 49 people. So I'm going to not sweat about the 50th one. And I feel like a lot of times veterinarians particularly are like, well, I have 99 positive reviews on my website and there's this one. And they go, well, what is the one? And they explain it. And well, so, you know, that's, you're never going to please everyone. And that's mm-hmm. okay, because you've pleased totally. And you have to give yourself permission to not be a people pleaser all the time. Because if you please everybody, sometimes people are, they want to take advantage of you. And that's not the people that you should be pleasing. Or they could never be pleased, because where they are mm-hmm. is a bad place. And you can't fix their bad place. They have to want to come out of it on their own. So we just work around that. But we can't let it. We can't let it come into our world, you know, our joy, our peace, and mm-hmm. break that for us. We just have to be able to say, no, I am giving you grace. I understand where you're coming from. I hate that that is where you come from, but I can't own that. You know, that's you, that's yours. And this is, you know, if you want me to help you with it, I'll help you with it, but I'm not going to let you drag me into the drama or down into that rabbit hole. But that comes with age and experience, because we do find that when we're young, tend to get involved in drama much more readily than when we're old and we're going, there is no way I'm getting into that mess. I used to, every morning on the way to work, I was hired to kind of fix a very toxic practice. And I, on the way to work, I would think about the things I needed to do and the people and who, you know, were kind of on board with improving the culture and the other ones who were never going to change to improve the culture. And I would just say, just, you know, give me the words and the wisdom. That would be my prayer every morning. Words and wisdom to say the right thing and to know what would be the right thing to do. And I think when you ask for those things from the universe, they come to you and you're able to do what you need to do when those situations arise. And you know what the right thing to do is. It's the other thing, but we don't listen very well to the universe when it tells us things. And that's to have peace in our mind in order to be able to listen. So I think, you know, that's where the meditation comes in. People think you have to like sit in a room and, you know, lotus pose and do all the things, right? Wear your yoga clothes to meditate, but you really don't. You just have to calm your mind and kind of listen to yourself or listen to the universe, you know, guide you where it needs you to go. And you know, just relax.
Yeah, there is a big part of relaxation. My I like my meditation. It's my entry into meditation is a full body relaxation, just really getting in touch with my body. And that makes a big difference. Debbie, I do want to like go 2 steps back to something you said. And it's like, you know, so I think it's very wise to be able to say, like, you know, that one person, you know, I can't please everybody. So like, this is totally, totally right. At the same time, for me, it's also that there is no mistake in the universe. There is that person pushes your button for a reason. So there is something for you to be learned. If you have the time and the inclination, you don't have to take it on, but chances are, because it hurts, it is actually yours. So if you can, you know, take that. So, you know, for what I do with clients, then this is the process of the work. I go like, okay, so what is it that you think about them? You know, and then so like they are unreasonable. Okay, so can I turn this around? Am I unreasonable thinking everybody should love me? Like, yeah. Right? Or they're mean, you know? Can I turn this around? Can I see how they're not mean? Can I look at this one person and say like, okay, well, maybe they're not in a good space. Maybe they're, you know, and can I look at, can I turn this around to me and go like, how is it that at looking at this person, I am mean? And maybe it's just a little thing. Mm-hmm. And so if we use those judgments that we have on other people, you know, we can really open our own mind and our heart, because the openness of our heart follows the openness of our mind a huge degree by saying like, okay, so yes, it's not my fault, yet I feel that it hurts me. So what is there? You know, like that. So that's what I wanted to say.
I love that you brought that up, because I feel like when we have people who are difficult or who complain and we want to dismiss that, like it's not my fault and it's just them, it's not. And there may be something that we did to trigger it. And so that's why I like to kind of backtrack the event.
Yes.
So where was the tipping point that it went south, that we can go back and go, okay, I see that this was something I said that triggered that. And in the future, I will know better. I have this amazing example of just something so simple that no one would ever have thought that this would be a trigger. But a veterinarian was doing an exam on, I can't remember what the pet or dog, a cat or dog. And the client was very chatty and she was talking. They were having conversation. And when the doctor put her stethoscope in and she tried to listen to the heart and lungs, she just pointed her finger to the sky, like, hold that thought just a minute. Well, the woman became irate because she felt that was so disrespectful. And come to find out, after it was, you know, that it was talked out, her grandmother used to do that to her when she was a child and make her be quiet when she was trying to talk and trying. And she, it just struck her, this memory, this childhood event came back to her, and the veterinarian meant no harm. And who would have thought, you know, now, personally, I would have thought that would, I would have just said to the client, if you could just hold your thought for just a minute while I listen, then we'll pick the conversation back up. Then that would have stopped it all. But it was a learning tool, right? So it actually ended up being a learning tool for the veterinarian, just to not point your finger at people and make them, because she'd probably been doing it for a long time and it didn't bother anybody else, but it bothered this one person. So we didn't really know what will trigger people into, you know, kind of going down the path. A lot of the reading I've done in psychology and psychotherapy stuff from psychologists and psychiatrists is like, all problems of today are typically rooted in the past.
Right.
And whether it was something you did, but it could have been an event that happened at another practice or with another person that maybe was similar to what was going on here. And that one went a bad way. And so this person automatically becomes defensive because she's thinking, oh, this is going to be just like that one. This is going to turn out that way. They're not going to help me. I'm going to have to go to battle to fight for my animal or whatever it is that I want. And that you can't know that, but you could have awareness of how things could come across and be open to finding out what you did that triggered it. I think a lot of chatter has been going on recently in the last year, particularly about practices firing clients because they don't take any crap whatsoever, right? It's just, you're gone. Well, I understand that people are being fractious more so than ever, but we are too, because we are equally as tired, equally as stressed, equally have gone through pandemics and social unrest. And we have to take some ownership of the fact that we are just as fragile as the public, and own the fragility, right? We are traumatized. And we can't just push it all off. No, it's only the clients. No, it's us too. It's going both ways. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. And Debbie, I think that is, you know, that is such an important piece to just be aware of, because it is all of us together. There is, you know, and so this is, you can take that both ways. You could say like, oh my goodness, that means it's never going to change. But that just means we're in a phase of a very fast evolution right now. So we are moving very fast. And right now it's a bottleneck and it's really scary. It's like really scary, very unsettling, but it, you know, it's a phase, it's a growth phase. And the other way you can look at it is like, we're all in this together. So like, let's look around and go like, okay, look, so in any one moment I can see 10 people very happy, 10 people upset, 10 people sad. You know, it's a thing, like it's a, you know, all of us together. So we all move through that. And like, the person that screams at you might help the bagger out on the road next thing. We don't know. So we change. And when we don't like take it and this is the moment and this is all there is, then, you know, it's really easier to deal with things, I think. And then also, you know, what you said, like lots of things go back to our childhood or things that happened before. And like, that's what's often with clients, what people say to me is like, oh, I didn't think I'm traumatized. But the thing is, the traumas can be small. They can be so small. Like one of my major trauma is, because I grew up in Germany, every child had to go to kindergarten. And I've hated school for 12 years.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, like, so it happens. And it's like small things and nobody meant anything bad about it. But to that little girl who had to leave home at 3, it wasn't acceptable.
Yeah.
And, you know, and these are the things we carry, and these are the things that trigger us. So, you know, it doesn't mean like we've grown up with horrible parents at all.
No. Well, it's funny that you say that, because I was talking to somebody yesterday, and she said she's a life coach, and she said, I have a client who won't unpack her apartment. And we found out after much discussion that the reason she won't pack her apartment is if she decorates it, her mother will be so judgmental that she didn't do it appropriately or didn't put things where they're supposed to be, that she avoids the judgment completely by just not unpacking. And I went, wow. I mean, it just, you know, and you know that her mother didn't mean to traumatize her like that, that she probably critiqued her to try to think that she was going to be, you know, improving her or making exactly. her into her own mini me. A lot of times I think that's happening, but those things are traumatizing to
yes.
young minds. And, mm-hmm. And we always want the approval of our parents and making sure that we're doing, you know, the appropriate things, but our parents are human too. And everybody's just doing the best they can. Right. That is just, mm-hmm. I think sometimes we have to just give our parents some grace and go, you know what, if I had been raising two kids in the middle of whatever it was, then I probably would have done the same thing. And it was not intentional on your part to do this harm. And now I have to look at it myself and go, okay, I am no longer a child and I do not have mm-hmm. to have the approval of my mother to decorate my apartment. And I'm also going to have to learn to move into conflict when she says something to me that's inappropriate, is to say, you know what, this is my apartment and mm-hmm. it's decorated the way I like it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you decorate your house your way. I'm going to decorate my house my way. And we're both fine with that. You know, we'll both be fine with that. But
exactly.
We avoid it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I actually have a very similar thing that for years I cleaned my house because my mother. And once I had unraveled that for myself and, you know, gotten through it, my mom turned around one day on the phone without me ever having to go into conflict with her and said, you know, you do so well decorating. You really have a hand for that. And this is what I find is that when I'm clear on me, when it's like undone in me, mm-hmm. the world does not show it to me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love this. Yeah. Such a great thread. I love this conversation because I don't think we really explore the things that affect us in our work, because a lot of those things happen in the home. And sometimes our work can be the safe haven. It can be the respite from whatever is happening in other parts of our lives. And I work to the businesses that I ran, I worked to make it that way. I wanted it to be a fun place to come. I wanted it to be relaxing to work there. Even though it was hard physical work, it didn't have to be mentally negative. It could be mm-hmm. fun. You could joke around. You could find the humor in some of the ridiculous stuff that would come through. And I don't think that client bashing is particularly fun. I don't like it at all, as a matter of fact. But dogs and cats particularly will do very funny things. And we could laugh at those things. It gets them into a lot of trouble, but sometimes you just scratch your head and go, really? How in the heck did you manage to eat a Hot Wheels car? Because I still to this day can see this x-ray in my mind of the little axles in the stomach of this dog that ate a car. But, you know, we just have to find the fun. And mm-hmm. like a lot of times we've lost that. During the pandemic, we were, again, very fragile, very traumatized. Every time, humans don't like disruption, right? We like routine. We like to know what's going to happen the next thing. And when there's disruption, our sense of safety diminishes. And then we really start to go into this amygdala hijack. But we lost that. And so the things that we would have found humor in before, maybe we didn't, or everything all of a sudden, like the sky was falling on us. And I think the younger you were, the more affected you were by those things. My mother, as I said, was 90, went through the whole pandemic like, you know, she had already been through two. It didn't matter to her. Uh-huh. And she was not afraid of getting out into the world and doing whatever she wanted to do. She took precautions as was appropriate, but she still did not go and hide in the corner. But many, many young people were so afraid to do anything, to get out of the house, to do anything. And there were people who, you know, reacted on both sides of the spectrum when somewhere, as usual, the happy medium was the logical place to be. But we're human beings and we often don't live in the logical place in the middle, because our mind just takes us off on these tangents. But I feel like having more conversations about this, about kind of the things that happen to us that create us and create our persona is an important thing that we can talk about in veterinary medicine, but just in life. I think I've said often the two things that I think would be so important for us to teach in school would be how your mind works and how to manage money. Because if you teach those two things, life is golden. You have got it made. There you go.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
This has been wonderful. I really have enjoyed having a conversation with you, and we're going to put your contact information in the show notes. Let people be able to get in contact with you, hopefully engage in some of your classes, definitely read your books, and hopefully have, you know, an epiphany that they really have control. They can manage these things. And I think that's, we really have to understand that we can control how we react to things, and we cannot let people take us down a path that we don't want to go to. And I think that's really pertinent. So I'd like to wrap up with any final words of wisdom, anything, you know, you'd particularly like for people to know about you, or maybe a favorite quote or a favorite book that you would recommend.
Yeah. The quote that I was, it's so funny. Like the quote that came to me earlier is like, I'm a total Harry Potter geek. I've like read Harry Potter, I don't know how often now, not the movies. Like, I mean, the movies are fine, but the books, and I quote them left, right, and center, because I think there's some really good quotes in there. And one of them is the universal popularity, like what you said. And this is Dumbledore to Hagrid, because Hagrid, like, you know, it's been told once again, he's a giant and he's dirty and da-da-da, and he's hiding in his hut. And Dumbledore says to him, you know, if you're waiting for universal popularity, you're going to be in your hut for a very long time.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Yeah. And I too
love, and I love
the Harry Potter books. They are on my bookcase. Every single one of them lined up in order. And I was one of those people who, I didn't wait in line to read them as they came out. I got into them a little bit late, so I didn't have to wait long periods between them. And so I cheated a little bit when I read the series, but still love them. And I think the writing is wonderful. And you're right. There's my other favorite character to quote is Winnie the Pooh, because I love Pooh, and Pooh has some wonderful quotes too.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And I like that there is this version, the Tao of Pooh. Which is the bear coming out and then doing commentary on the Tao, which is my other favorite book. And the Tao is it's a book on leadership, on how elite. So there is a very famous quote that creeps up all over again. It's like, when the leader is done, when the master is done with the work, the people say, "We did it."
Yes.
So there is a lot of lovely, lovely, lovely things in the Tao, and it just lives somewhere around me all the time, and I keep picking it up. And
I agree. Lots of good stuff out there if we take the time to learn it. That's the thing. Just it really. I was having a conversation with one of my friends who also used to manage hospitals, and I said, "Oh, what I would have given to have known then what I know now when I was 30 and managing these practices." And he said, "Oh gosh, Deb, me too. But there's no reason that those managers out there, or those leaders out there now, can't learn these things. And I think that's the important thing for us to know, even though we work in a scientific and medical profession, if we learn how to people, if we learn how to human, our lives become much better and we have much more joy in what we do, no matter what it is. You know, it's not the hours that you put in, it's what you put into the hours that matter and how you enjoy the things that you are doing. And so keeping that, you know, that work-life balance, I think that's garbage. I think that it is entirely having enough happy things in your life to offset the sad things that are going to happen and keeping that into perspective. And if you're doing things that give you joy 60 hours a week, then don't feel guilty about not doing it. Have at it. If you are doing something that you hate for 20 hours a week, change jobs because the life is too short. You know, we get one chance at this thing and you need to enjoy what you're doing. So don't stick it out. You can find the magic out there somewhere because they do exist. So, well,
Exactly.
thank you so much again. We'll make sure that everybody can get in touch with you and encourage them to take some of your training because I think it's the things that we can solve in veterinary medicine are often solved with good communication and introspection.
Yes, absolutely. Introspection, self-awareness, and self-compassion, because the more we can really, I know this is like a total platitude, but the more you love yourself, the easier it's going to be to do it to others.
Give yourself a little grace. You know, it's fine.
Yes.
It's fine. It really will be fine. All right. Thank
Yes.
you, Steph. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us this time on this episode of The Bend. We appreciate your attention and we appreciate you connecting with our guest. And we hope that you learned something that will be of value to you. Thank you.